the two items that we pulled. The city attorney's requested that 883 be carried over to next week, so without objection, I will do that and put it on next week's calendar. 884, Commissioner Fritz, I think you wanted that pulled. Is that right? Do you want to deal with it now, or?
I was hoping to have a presentation by your staff. So are they coming to do that?
No. I think the short answer is no. So let's hold it for later. And I think we're probably close enough to 877 that we could probably start. Is that right, Commissioner Novick?
I believe so.
Okay, let's go ahead and take 877 then.
877, accept Portland's Neighborhood Greenways Assessment Report.
Commissioner Novick.
Mayor and colleagues, we want this to be a city where lots of people feel comfortable bicycling, because when people are bicycling, they're not using fossil fuels and contributing to global warming, and because they're also healthier and not contributing to rising healthcare costs as much as people who are more sedentary. There are some people, of course, who will bicycle whatever their conditions. They're daredevils. They don't care how many cars they're dealing with or how fast people are driving. There's a fair number of other people who would like to bicycle, but they are concerned about their safety, so they'll bicycle if conditions are conducive to that. Recognizing this, years ago, we decided to establish greenways, stretches of street where the assumption was we will have relatively low vehicle speeds and not that many vehicles, and they will be especially conducive to bicycling and walking. And most of these greenways have worked extremely well. We have discovered that there's some of our greenways where the vehicle speeds and vehicle counts have sort of crept up beyond where people are still comfortable bicycling and walking. And PBOT has concluded that our staff need better direction as to what to do when that happens. So basically, this report and this resolution are about providing guidelines, not hard and fast rules, to our staff about what to do when you're dealing with a greenway where the speeds and the vehicle counts are higher than they should be, and in essentially empowering our staff to say to take steps which will vary depending on the street and which will be made in consultation with everybody in the neighborhood to get those speeds down and those vehicle counts down. So that is the idea behind this report and this resolution. And I will now turn it over to Margie Bradway and Roger Geller, and they can tell me if what I said was wrong.
Hi, good morning. That was a fabulous introduction, Commissioner Novick. Thank you. In fact, I think you just did my first slide. So we're here to talk about neighborhood greenways. As Commissioner Novick just explained, it's a low-stress network, primarily for biking and facilitating walking. And I want to note that we were the first city in the nation to have a neighborhood greenway network. We started building our network over 30 years ago. We have people who come in from all over the nation who've copied our neighborhood greenway network. That's from St. Louis, just was in town, from Seattle to London. So we have the benefit of being leaders in neighborhood greenways, as we do many things in biking. One of the advantages or disadvantages of being a leader in neighborhood greenways is that we have a very mature system. And when we put them a system in place starting 30 years ago, we couldn't realize the amount of population, the amount of growth that occurred in Portland. How do you keep the neighborhood greenways operating? How do you maintain them as this city grows? So a lot of this report is a data-driven approach to look at exactly what is happening on our neighborhood greenways. I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking again, just walking through what is a neighborhood greenway, just a quick touch on the policy support for these neighborhood greenways. Then I'm going to hand it over to Roger to dive into the data that we looked at, and then our recommendations both on performance guidelines and on policy moving forward. Next slide. Roger's going to do it. And I want to, before I dive in too much, I also want to recognize Scott Cohen, who's sitting in the front row, who acted as our managing editor for the report and did a great job. So thank you, Scott. Okay. So I think we've hit on this. There are streets with few automobiles traveling slowly and prioritizing biking and walking. So why are neighborhood greenways important? They're a foundational part of Portland's transportation system. They carry thousands of people every day, thousands of people on bikes. They create safe, comfortable places for people to walk and bike. And One thing about neighborhood greenways is they really provide connections between parks and schools. Not too many people know that the neighborhood greenway system also provides a huge part of our Safe Routes to School network. So we really focus on children when we're looking at expanding and building our network. The neighborhood greenways also create a sense of place. And Portland is known for its placemaking. You've seen a presentation recently on intersection repair. A lot of those projects happen on neighborhood greenways. A lot of our green streets, stormwater happen on neighborhood greenways. And most of our Sunday parkways events and Safe Routes to School events happen on neighborhood greenways. Again, these are safe streets that are good for placemaking, good for holding events. So I think Commissioner Novick said it best, that really the goal of neighborhood greenways is to create a place for people of all ages and all abilities to bike and walk. And in particular, I think you may be familiar with the breakdown of the types of cyclist. This has been before you and the bicycle plan, but really we're aiming at the 60% interested and concerned in trying to provide a place for them to travel. So there's lots of policy support. I won't dive into each one of these for neighborhood greenways, but the Portland plan and the comprehensive plan are very clear that in order to meet our livability goals and our climate change goals, we need to aim for a 25% mode split for biking. Neighborhood greenways and biking in particular is also a key strategy as part of the climate action plan. In the city's recent growth scenarios analysis, which is comparing kind of future growth with our climate change goals, of the recommendations in the climate action plan, bicycle transportation is one that currently offers the most significant and measurable reductions in greenhouse gases. So we find that neighborhood greenways is very important for achieving climate stability as well. So here's a look at the overall Portland bike network. We have 325 miles of bike network. Not all of those are what we consider low stress. Can you go to the next? This is a look at the low stress only. So the green in the middle is neighborhood greenways. The other low stress network, parts of the low stress network, are trails or buffered bike lanes. So you can see in the middle there that the neighborhood greenways really are in the heart of the city and provide a lot of connectivity to other low-stress corridors. Next slide. So here's an actual map of the existing neighborhood greenways, and you can see the dotted lines are the ones that are funded. These include the historical neighborhood greenways that started closer to the city, and as we build out the network, we get farther out to the north, to the east, and to the south. Next slide. So what is the intent of the report? Well, as Commissioner Novick said, we've heard a lot of concerns about neighborhood greenways. We've heard a lot of concerns about Clinton Street in particular, and we wanted to figure out what's working and what's not and take a data-driven approach. So we looked at all the data in terms of speed, volumes, and ridership, and we also looked at our existing policies, and we wanted to create an understanding of the role of the neighborhood greenway in the transportation system plan as well. So again, as I said, we're going to offer our recommendations at the end of the slideshow. Next. So at this point, I'm going to hand it off to our bicycle coordinator, Roger Geller, to talk about the data. And the good news is, as Commissioner Novick said, many of our neighborhood greenways are working very well.
Great. Thank you, Margie. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. As Margie mentioned, this has really been a data-driven approach. We looked at 1,500 data points to assess how our greenways are working. And generally, the news is good. They're working well in a lot of places. Ridership is high on greenways in the parts of the city where bike ridership is high. This map just shows the commute mode split by bike, by census tract, the darker, the higher. And basically what this is showing, the circle's 4 miles from the Burnside Bridge, is that about half of Portland commuters live in areas where the average bike mode split is 13%. We've seen a 250% growth in bicycle use in the city since 2000. And here we superimpose greenway counts. And basically in the areas of the city where bike use is high, use of the greenways is correspondingly high. And the greenways that are the most heavily used tend to be in southeast and northeast Portland. So there's really three key factors that influence how well a greenway is operating. Automobile speeds are a big part of that. And we found that more than half of our greenways are operating at 23 miles or less for cars, which is good, but about 4% are 30 miles or over, and then there's this mid-range. This is what happens when you look at 1,500 data points. you map them out. And so basically, if this is our Greenway network. Green is generally good on this map. Yellow is kind of in this nether area, and then once you start getting into orange, pink, and red, these are speeds that are generally considered to be too high for the effective operation of a greenway. Generally, what we found was that Tillamook, Lincoln, Clinton, the Burnside Corridor, Sam and Taylor, and the 40s bikeway all had speeds that were generally too high, mostly our older greenways. So speeds of 25 miles per hour or greater on our greenways. So we also took a look at automobile volumes. And, volumes are a key element for determining how comfortable a greenway is. We want both safety and comfort. Volumes, interestingly, are also a key factor for speed. We have the authority in the city of Portland to set low speed limits on our greenways as long as the traffic volumes are less than 2,000. Once they get above 2,000, we lose that ability to set a low and safe speed limit. So most of our greenways have...
Yes. 2,000 per day or...
2,000 automobiles per day, yes. So almost three-quarters of our greenways have fewer than 1,000 cars on them. Again, in this slide, generally green is good. And about 85% of them are less than 1,500. But we see some key stretches of our neighborhood greenways, especially on ones that we consider especially important in our system, that have much higher volumes, typically in northwest and southeast. But we're also, as we are delving into more detailed data, we're also seeing spikes in automobile use during the AM and PM peaks as cars are increasingly using some greenways as cut-through routes. And this just shows greenways where we have more than 1,500 cars a day, all of these that are listed on the left. And then when you combine cars that have greenways with more than 1,500 cars a day and speeds greater than 25 miles an hour, these are the ones that really pop out as problems. So this report includes some recommended performance guidelines. And what we're asking you to do today is to direct the Bureau of Transportation to incorporate these guidelines into our practice. And the development of these guidelines really begins with best national practices. It's also influenced by our 30 years of experience, as well as the fact that we're getting a lot of complaints from citizens that these greenways at certain levels of traffic, speed and volume are not working well. And so what we're recommending for vehicle speeds is a 20 mile per hour speed. And this is really a safety measure. In a collision at 20 miles per hour, you're 90% likely to survive. If that increases even by 10 miles per hour, it's a 50-50 chance whether you would survive a collision. We're also looking for automobile volumes of ideally 1,000 cars a day with a maximum of 2,000. And what this does is it really minimizes the exposure that people biking on the greenways have to closely passing cars. The time that you're in the closest proximity to a car or somebody riding a bike is when they're passing you. At 1,000 cars a day, on a 10-minute ride on a greenway, you're only going to get passed 7 times. Once you jump that up to 3,000, you're up to about 23 times where you're being passed. And what we're seeing on some of our greenways is that as the automobile volumes increase, people driving are getting a little frustrated. They're finding it difficult to pass. And then we're seeing unsafe passing behaviors. We don't have that documented in data, but we're hearing that anecdotally, and we're observing it anecdotally ourselves on the streets. So we want to really create as few interactions between people biking and driving as possible and also prevent the kind of conditions that lead to unsafe behaviors. And finally, the key for a greenway is crossing the busy streets. So we want to make sure that during the busiest times of the day, people have a minimum of 50 safe crossing opportunities per hour. Ideally, we'd like to have 100 safe crossing opportunities per hour. And how you do that depends on the condition of the roadway you're looking to cross. And so that's what we're asking you to direct us to do. And with that, I'll turn it back to
Roger.
Margie. Yes.
Or Commissioner Novick, just a question. The resolution is titled Accept the Portland Neighborhood Greenway Assessment Report. So we're used to accepting reports. But the resolve says accept it and the recommendations contained therein, and then it directs PBOT to implement the recommendations. So I'm just a little unclear about PBOT is asking us to direct them to do something, and I'm fine with that. But it also, the report also is replete with references to the fact that PBOT doesn't have adequate resources to meet the challenges in front of it. So are we, in effect, directing you to do something that is going to require you to change your budget or seek additional general fund dollars or change any priorities in the queue? And because it's more than accepting a report. You're asking us to direct you to do something. And I'm not clear about how that relates to our budget process and our normal policy making. And I just want to be clear about what we're directing you to do.
Commissioner, I'll take a stab at that. I think that, looking at you're right, this is more than simply accepting a report. The specific language is direct PBOT to engage communities in implementing the project recommendations contained in the report, incorporate the operational guidelines into traffic operation practices, and pursue recommended policy suggestions through the transportation system plan update. And I think that basically boils down to we will do what we can to implement these recommendations within the context of existing resources.
Two of the three cost nothing.
Yeah, and I want to be, we really tried very hard in this report to have it outcome-based, right? So we're talking about streets that are not performing, but our guidelines today are outcome-based, and they're guidelines, they're not engineering standards. So what your recommendation by accepting it and is kind of endorsing these guidelines, from that, I think, flows some type of prioritization for if and when funding is available. We will work on these streets that are not performing well. But there's nothing in the report that says thou shall then work on these certain projects.
But we're setting the policy framework, and you are then going to prioritize sequence, funding, and other things. So we're not handcuffing you in that
sense. Well, actually, we're both going to do that. I mean, you do make project recommendations on page 22, and that's fine. I would expect the commissioner and the bureau to propose those projects in our capital planning process, right? And
right.
And along with other projects coming from PBOT. I don't want us to be shy about that. The short answer to your question is, will this lead to expenditures? Yes. When those expenditures will happen depends on what the council does each time we do a budget.
Right.
So that's up
and,
to us.
And I,
well,
and
Mayor,
I,
that, that's
can
a distinction I, oh, probably me. Lost on most people
yeah.
in the public,
yeah.
where it says we're going to implement the recommendations and they have a budget cast. I mean, I was thinking, as I was thinking about your resolution, of preparing a resolution that accepts a report on homelessness and sets the council directive that we reduce it by 50%. That would have a budget impact, and I'm happy to bring
yes.
that resolution. But I want to make sure that we set expectations. So when we accept reports, we set policy, and we set priorities. How you implement it is still your business within the framework of your existing resources.
Or
exactly.
additional resources as we approve them.
Correct.
In any case, I mean, I guess I'm not troubled by the fact that we have a bureau saying, here are some projects we'd like to do. Or we plan to do as soon as they are funded.
As long as we're separating the budget decisions from the policy decisions, Mayor,
yep.
you're free to recommend any expenditure request. But right. but I think we have to be clear with the public about what we're signing on for today. And the recommendations are aspirational. The policy you're asking clear direction on.
And I think that's fair. I have a related question, which is, you do have, I get the policy recommendations. I see the project recommendations. How would, given if the council accepts this report and we've incorporated these recommendations, how would these bike projects be prioritized over others? I mean, there are other bike projects besides greenway projects. There are separated bikeway projects. There are additional bike lanes. There are projects like the 20s and the 50s. So how do these do they change ranking based on the council's acceptance of this report?
That's a great question, Mayor. So for clarification on how PBOT's budget works, we have our capital improvement budget project, and typically these greenways are considered operational improvements, and they live in a bucket in the CIP called the active transportation bucket, and they're the only flexible dollars, really, that PBOT has. 5 years ago, that bucket was $2 million. It's down to $400 million, and that also is the same bucket that we address safe routes to school and high crash corridors. So there's a lot of need for this very small, relatively small, flexible bucket. So when we think about priorities going forward, we think about priorities within that small bucket of operational improvements that's separate and distinct from our capital project. And I think we have to do, I think I'm looking at Roger, but we have to do both. We have to make travel and our priority corridors, and particularly those that need, say, buffered bike lanes on high-speed corridors, those need to be a priority in certain places. And it depends on the quadrant, depends on that community. And in other places, neighborhood greenways is going to be what we need to prioritize. And as Roger's map shows, each neighborhood is different and the ridership is different. Roger, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the larger capital projects that we go after are typically through regional federal dollars that are funneled through the region. And those tend to be on a different scale than these type of projects that we're talking about here.
Right.
And so the 20s bikeway is a good example. So that's a long corridor project. It's multi-millions of dollars to do that whole project. Some of the things that we're looking at here, for example, looking at Clinton Street, you know, the fix for some of these projects or for some of these issues that we've identified are not tremendously expensive. We would not go after federal dollars for those kind of fixes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the distinction, that we continue to prioritize the large corridor projects with federal funds and look to improve our system with the flexible funding we have available.
Roger, can I ask you about automobile volumes? Because in your chart, you say over 2,000 triggers changes. So the context for that is that as our roads become more congested, and they clearly are, and our neighborhood roads are more congested, cars are being displaced onto the greenways, and we can all attest to that. There are more cars. So that makes it less safe on the greenways. So my sense is it's only going to get it worse, not better. And where I live in Inner Northeast, you know, I don't drive between 4 and 7 because I can't safely get anywhere. It's just complete congestion. So when you say over 2,000 triggers changes, what are the kinds of things that you would consider as by way of changes when you have that kind of level of congestion?
So both, I think, both educational and engineering tools. So the standard engineering tools are some kind of physical barrier that prevents cut-through traffic on the neighborhood greenway streets, a traffic diverter like we see at 16th and Tillamook and Clinton and Chavez, Lincoln and Chavez. We have we have 21 locations around the city, I believe, with traffic diverters. And there's also operational diversion where you put up a sign that says, you know, do not enter. We've done something like that at 52nd and Division Street, where we allow buses through but not automotive traffic. Things like that are working well. But it generally is some type of barrier. It could also be improvements out on the main roads so that the main roads operate better, and the desire to divert off of them and cut through neighborhood streets becomes less attractive. But I think that's the key. And I guess I would, being an optimist, I would take exception to the idea that things are only going to get worse. I think that if we actually realize our regional and local goals, there's a good chance that things could get better.
Yes, all I'm commenting on is that let's take someone going from downtown east. The Banfield between 4 and 7 is not a great choice. Sandy is now backed up all the way to the river. Broadway is backed up. And what I observe, either on my bike or when I occasionally drive, is that out of frustration, people are getting off those main roads and going into the neighborhood, and they're going at excessive speeds with a lot of frustration and sometimes anger. And that's exactly what we want to discourage.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what we want to discourage. And, you know, the operation of our bikeway system is a key part of our strategies for accomplishing many goals. And just what you're describing is the kind of thing we need to prevent and protect so that the bikeway system continues to operate.
Other question?
This is a really excellent report, and thank you for your work on it. I'm wondering, do we have any information on the demographics of the people who bike in greenways? Do we know if we're being successful in investing in these greenways and encouraging more women, families, communities of color to use them?
We have some really good data at the regional level. Metro did a Oregon Household Activity Survey back in 2011. And so at the broad level, at the regional level, what they found is that demographically, for example, a surprising finding was that people of color bike and walk at higher rates than do white people. And that's true throughout the region. So that's kind of at the broadest level, and also people at all income levels are well represented in terms of bicycling. Things break down by gender, generally, that in Portland we see a great gender disparity, more men bicycling than women. On the parts of town that we've identified as being the most comfortable, we're starting to see, and we've been seeing for years, the proportion of women climbing. And that's a very good kind of ready indicator that we can look at. So in parts of town, like on the Greenway system, even on streets like Williams and Vancouver, we see 40% of the people that we count are women. And in, you know, the far reaches where we recognize that conditions are not yet as comfortable for bicycling as they are in the inner city, we see women at 8, 9, 10%. So that kind of gives us a good idea of, you know, who we're appealing to.
Okay, thank you. That leads in nicely to my next set of questions. Do you have a timeline for the three north-south greenways in East Portland that you've identified in the recommendations?
Can you move forward to the slide? So we've got a slide on the...
Which one?
The last slide, yeah. So as Roger mentioned, their future projects are typically... we pursue grants, and we have been successful in pursuing grants. And so the Rodney project is almost complete. The 20s bikeway is currently underway. It's about 50%. The 100s is also underway, and 130s is underway. The 100 and the 150s will be going under the kickoff process next construction season in the summer. So they're about a year out, but they're all happening within a year window or kicking off in a year window.
And what's the planned public engagement for the ones in East Portland?
So I'm not the project manager. There's project manager for each of these, but we will have a lot of public dialogue about these greenways. It was important to us that the recommendations today are guidelines and not standards, because we want project managers to go out to the neighborhood, have a conversation about these guidelines, have the ability to make tweaks, to get public input on how they function, and go from there. So Clinton Street project has actually already kicked off, and we have an open house scheduled for September 12th. And we'll get input on our proposed design. I imagine we would do the same for the ones in East Portland.
Okay. And why is there no connection, Greenway connection, from East Portland to downtown?
So going back to the Portland plan and the bike plan, typically when the neighborhood Greenway system started, and Roger has a lot of this historical context, who focused on the 3-mile trip, and so it was. A lot of the neighborhood greenways really focused on that 3-mile circumference around downtown, and we know now that we need to serve the entire city, and we have a lot of work to build it out. So we are concentrating a lot of effort on East Portland, but it's going to take a while to build our system out. Do you have any?
I think the other key is that, you know, greenways, you can only develop that type of a facility on certain types of streets. And so our system also relies on having good low-stress bikeways on the major streets. So there are techniques that also create, you know, something that's better than bike lanes, be it a buffered bike lane or a physically protected cycle track. So those have got to be part of the system that works well. And as you get closer to the main center part of the city where the traffic intensity increases, those are increasingly the types of facilities that have to be incorporated.
Well, I am concerned, though, that there isn't an east-west connection on Greenway. You can't do
one
it.
One of our top priority projects is also the 4M project, which is Mill Market, Maine, that basically runs from the boundary with Gresham, and it runs into the Lincoln Bikeway, which will then go all the way in.
I didn't see that on the...
It's not funded. That's because it's not yet funded. It's one of our highest priorities
plan, but not
for seeking funding.
Right. There is an aspirational route there.
Okay. Yes, there is.
My last questions are about Southwest. What's the plan for improving Southwest?
So Southwest, and the report notes this, that greenways in Southwest will not have the type of prominence that they do in sort of the old streetcar grid neighborhoods, as well as even East Portland. Even though it's discontinuous, you can still make it work. The topography creates very few continuous streets in Southwest, and those streets that are continuous tend to be the flat ones, tend to be the busiest ones. And so the bicycling strategy for Southwest is really to make those larger streets work for bicycling. Like a street like Barber, for example, needs to have a protected bikeway on it. We've seen examples of that on Southwest Multnomah, where we built a cycle track. We've seen examples on BH Highway, where we've built buffered bike lanes. It's really the strategy for Southwest, because of the topography out there and the street pattern, is really to make the larger streets work. Greenways will still have a role out there, principally as connectors to those larger streets, but they won't be the types of long corridors that you see in other parts of the city.
Roger, following up on what Commissioner Fritz asked, what's the status of the big vision we talked about a couple years ago, linking Gateway Green to a trail along the Banfield to downtown?
Also one of our highest priorities that it's now called part of a project called T-Hop, which is T-Hop or THOP, if you want. It is a connector between Tillamook. It then builds that piece under the I-205, connecting into the I-205 pathway and Gateway Green, and then continues out further east along Holiday, Oregon, and Pacific. So it's creating a greenway corridor that links across I-205.
And is the continuing challenge figuring out how to coexist with the railroad?
Not there. It's ODOT right-of-way. It's mostly just gaining the funding at the regional level to do that project.
But again, in terms of east-west connector, isn't that project potentially very beneficial in linking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why it's one. It is also, you know, it was identified by the Bike Advisory Committee as a top priority. It's one of our agency's top priorities to seek funding in the federal funding rounds.
So this November,
I think that was your resolution many years ago to say keep hammering after the.
Yeah, I think parks and transportation mm-hmm. were yep. looking at it, but there was also a tremendous opportunity to do some housing development along that corridor mm-hmm. and get people out of their cars and into bikes. But there's a railroad. The railroad piece is complicated.
As you go further west, yes, we've identified the segment that's only ODOT right of way, and we believe we can deal with that.
So going back to Commissioner Fish's initial questions about funding and priorities, I understand the difference between the major grants and the operational. If we're looking through an equity lens, we ought to be thinking about how to provide safe bike facilities for people who have nothing over improving the ones that we already have, which might not be ideal. So how is PBOT managing that challenge?
So the projects that Roger's talking about have come up through our TSP process, and I'm not the lead planner. That's the transportation system plan, and we have criteria for that, and there's an equity criteria that we look at. And so we look at equity, safety, other connectivity, other goals. And going into the next funding rounds, so the next funding opportunity at the state level, ODOT Enhance is in November, and then at the regional level, regional flex funds is this spring, we'll be taking those projects that meet our transportation system plan criteria.
And Commissioner, I think it's important to note that there, as Roger was saying, there are things that we can do to improve the functioning of existing greenways that are really quite low cost, putting in some diverters and some speed bumps. So I don't think that it would make sense to say we are going to do nothing to improve the performance of our existing greenways until we've made major new investments throughout the city, any more than it would make sense for parks to decide it's not going to do anything for parks in the inner part of the city before we've built a bunch more parks in the outer east side.
That's a nice straw man argument. I actually wasn't suggesting that. I was suggesting that if there are funding requests going to be coming to the council in the next budget, that we look at where can we provide some safe bike facilities, for instance, on Powell, on Barber, elsewhere. I would be more inclined to support that over at funding for additional greenway as in areas that already have them.
Understood. Thank you.
So are you finished with presentation? Because I have a question about Appendix C, so I wasn't sure how far down.
I think we did skip over one slide, so if we can backtrack, we've bounced it quickly. We've talked about this. And so just quickly on the recommendations regarding policy, as you're maybe aware, we're going through the process of updating both the comp plan and the transportation system plan. We had an ongoing conversation with the planners at PBOT about how to best address the neighborhood greenways in the TSP, but this report is not the place to do that, so I want to be clear to your question, Commissioner Fish, about what we're asking you to do today. We are not updating the TSP. What we do is we're recommending that our planning staff, working with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, evaluate and replace conflicting policies to make it clear that neighborhood greenways are allow diversion and allow a stress-free or a low-stress network. And so I can walk you through the different objectives in TSP Policy 6.13 if you want, but today we're just recommending that that's taken care of as part of a different process. That's all I wanted to hit on.
Okay. Other questions about that? So my question about Appendix C, and I we have a lot of people that want to speak on this item, so I don't want you to go on a great
Appendix
length,
C?
But you yeah. That's the tools and designs.
Yes.
So you mentioned sort of this in passing, in that this is an opportunity to look at what's working and what's not working. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that over this 30 years, Portland has tried a lot of things. We've been experimental in the ways we've tried to incorporate bikes into an existing street system and then make it safer and better and more convenient over time. I think it's also fair to say that some of those design tools have worked better than others. Without getting all the way down into the weeds of this kind of diverter versus that width of a lane, Roger particularly, but both of you, so what have we learned in terms of our toolkit? Are there too many tools in the kit? Are there still some more things that we're not using that are being used elsewhere in the world that we should be using? I'm just curious about sort of the state of the toolkit. Are we using the right tools? Are we using so many that we're confusing people, or can we use more? And which ones didn't work, and why are we not using them anymore? At least a summary view of that, I think, would be helpful to everybody.
Sure.
And I'm interested, so.
Well, what we found, we've done research over the years and found that speed bumps, a regular pattern of speed bumps rather than traffic circles, are much better at creating a consistent low speed on a roadway. I think we know that physical diversion, barrier diversion, works really well, especially if you do it in conjunction with, you know, some green paint that lets make sure that people biking go to the head of the line at signals. I think that there's some tools like pinch points that we've employed once or twice that probably aren't working that well. We haven't really used chicaning as a tool to slow cars on streets. Chicaning is where you make the street just kind of weave a little bit, and there's ways to do it with barriers or with parked cars sometimes, and so cars just don't have a straight shot where they can just kind of speed down. They have to, you know, pay attention, basically, and drive a little bit slower. That's something that we haven't really done, I think, in part because it's very expensive. Seattle has an example where they spent millions of dollars to do something like that. Our streets are a little bit narrower, so we haven't really tried that. I think generally we're satisfied with the toolkit that we have, and we do a lot of evaluation. Our engineers are very good at evaluating what we do. Are there more tools out there? I think we just started experimenting with operational diversion, where we just put up a sign that says, you know, don't go this way unless you're a bus. And I think we were pleased with how that worked at 52nd and Division. Mm-hmm. It may not be the thing that we'd use everywhere. We're looking at creating streets. Other jurisdictions around the world sometimes do one-way streets for segments on neighborhood streets. Mm-hmm. That's something that we really haven't done very much of yet. That would be an inexpensive and perhaps effective way to create diversion as well.
What they do in England is to have a jet out of the sidewalks to create a one lane and have a yield or a stop so that you have to slow down at that particular pinch point. And I think that works really well.
Yep, that can work
well.
And it's
not that expensive either.
Right. Yeah, there's things that we like that.
Roger, we used to hear from the Fire Bureau that they had a little bit of concerns about speed bumps.
Absolutely.
In terms of response times. Have we found some kind of detente on that issue?
Oh, yes. I mean, we always work with the Fire Bureau. They're good partners with us, and I think it was our putting in a lot of speed bumps that first brought us together, and they developed an emergency route system that we agreed not to touch, basically. And now we're working with them to develop and employ fire-friendly speed bumps. So these are speed bumps that don't go across the entire street. Instead, they're on one side of the street, then stair-step down to another side of the street, and so on. And we're working with them on that, and that allows them to kind of weave through the speed bumps without going over them and being unduly slowed down. So, yeah, I think it's a very good relationship we have with the Fire Bureau in working this stuff out. We don't put stuff down that they don't want.
Great. Other questions? Thank you both very much. Do you have some invited testimony, Commissioner, or are we just going straight to the sign-up sheet?
We're going straight to the sign-up sheet.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's do that.
We have 16 people signed up. Will the first three come up? And that is Terry Pablinski, Terry Parker, Alex Reed, and they'll be followed by Chris Anderson, Amy Subach, and Isabel McTee.
Good morning. Please, please try to be brief. Obviously, we have a lot of people signed up, but make your point. So welcome. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Terry Dublinski Milton. I'm on the board of Southeast Uplift and Transportation Land Use here for North Tabor. I would like to specifically speak on three points of the report. First of all, the peak vehicles per hour. One of the main ways I've been doing outreach on greenway safety for at least 4 years, and I've spoken at dozens of neighborhood associations. And this is the big area where we really need help, is the commute time, because a lot of our greenways will work mostly and then will fail at the AM or PM peak hours. Sometimes it's just one direction. But for a full network to work, if you really want your children to safely get to school, it's all about the pinch point, the one bad block, because you have a parent that will say, that block is way too busy because all the commuters are speeding to Providence. We will not let you go. And so they drive their kids to school. The number of pedestrian and bike crossings per hour, this is the second point, where it says you should have a minimum of 50 crossings per hour, but a preferred 100 per hour. Again, you have to look at the weakest link. And if you have one arterial on this route on your way to school and it is too dangerous and you can't get across, your parent is going to say, no, you cannot ride to school. I'd like to talk about urban forum for just a couple of seconds and what goes on outside of the 85th percentile. Speed bumps are great for most people, but you get that one red truck that speeds down the green line, hops all the speed bumps. And that's why, as part of an urban forum, a lot of outreach I've heard is that you should have diversion at regular intervals, every 5 to 7 blocks. So you know that that red truck that's hopping the speed bumps will be turned off. Then those trucks won't be on the greenway. There we are. That's what I want to say.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Who'd like me next?
Good morning. I'm wearing my own hat again today. My name's Terry Parker. It is only equitable that if cars are restricted from using greenway streets, gas tax revenues, and other motorist-paid taxes and fees also need to be restricted from paying for them. Likewise, if motor vehicles are restricted on greenways, bicycling needs to be discouraged on high traffic volume streets such as Hawthorne, Sandy Boulevard, and streets such as Lower Division and Halsey, where parallel bike routes are only a few blocks away. If motor vehicle travel lanes can be removed on Foster, thereby adding a combined 1,180 daily hours of engine running time, then bicycle lanes can be removed from streets like Southeast 26, where they create a safety hazard on such a narrow right-of-way. The boisterous and unruly squeaky wheel of the bicycle lobby has infiltrated and, for the most part, taken over control of PBOT and is unethically city-subsidized. The public process is broken. PBOT, citizen, and advisory committees have become stacked decks dominated by special interest and alternative mode advocates with little or no seats at the table for the primary financial stakeholders. Approximately 80% of the trips in Portland, the metro area, are by car. Nearly 10% of the jobs nationwide are tied to the auto industry, most of them family wage jobs. City streets are getting more congested with road diets and traffic diverters. PBOT is continuing to make the overall situation even worse. What will it take to end the discrimination towards drivers, reverse the city's prejudice and automobile policies, and create more family wage jobs? What will it take to stop profiling motorists as the origin for all safety issues? I'm going to defer from my written testimony here for a minute, because, Commissioner Fish, you were exactly right. The PBOT is not doing anything to accommodate the increased automobile traffic, and that's what's causing the cut-through traffic. We have to have better roads and less road diets and that sort of thing. Finally, the bottom line here is that adult bicyclist paid license and user fees need to be implemented as the primary source of funding for bike lanes, greenways, and other specialized bicycle infrastructure. And motorists must have an equitable representation on PBOT committees that is proportionally linked to the mode split and who supplies the funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Alex Reed. I am a Southeast Portland resident, and I'm adopting an infant daughter in a few months, so safety and getting around is top on my mind. I'm also part of Bike Loud PDX. I encourage you to accept this report and adopt the recommendations and view it as something that will help fix an urgent problem but won't do everything. So there's streets where people get around and with their kids. There are greenways that people don't feel safe on, and this will help with that, with the too many cars going too fast. There's other things with greenways that many of which you all have touched on that this won't fix, and I just want to remind you of some of those. One is that a couple years ago, when the city was facing budget cuts, part of the cuts to PBOT were of city funding to new greenways. We used to put in city money towards creating new greenways. Now, my understanding is that we fund somebody to apply for federal grants, and that's the only money that goes into constructing new greenways. So just wanted to remind of that reality, that if we want more connections in East Portland and Southwest Portland, we need to figure out a way to get more funding towards transportation for that. And lastly, that there are more problems on the greenways that weren't even touched on this report. There are some that existing that have stop signs every two blocks. And if we want people to get around by bike, then convenience is something that matters in how people choose how to get around. So that's something that we're going to advocate at Bike Loud, that the Portland Bureau of Transportation address at a future time. It's not as high as safety, but if you want people to get around by bike, it needs to be fast to some extent. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Next three, Chris Anderson, Amy Subach, Isabella McTighe. They will be followed by Jarek Kransky, Gerald Fittipaldi, and Paul Jeffrey.
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
So,
councilors, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've been trying to be not too distracting.
Just give us your name and anybody else's name you want to mention.
My name's Amy Subach, and this is Isaac Subach, my son. And this is Irma, my daughter. My husband. I wanted to testify in support of this Greenway plan for a number of reasons, one of which is that my family has a severe history of heart disease, and being able to use a bicycle as my primary form of getting around means that I'm able to be healthy, and I'll be able to live to see my children grow up. That's very important to me. Another thing is it's just a lot more fun to ride my bike to take her to school than it is to have a kid screaming in a car seat, as many parents know. And the other thing is, it's very important that Portland continues to be sustainable and equitable and livable. And as we increase our population over the next 15, 20 years, the more people we have riding bikes, the easier it is for us to ride bikes, the fewer people will be driving, and we'll be able to keep traffic lower and easier, and it'll be better for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Well said, despite the distraction.
Yeah, we're used to it.
Table pounding is permitted when you testify here.
I think he objects to this somehow. Not sure.
She's been riding her bike to school since how old? Since she was three. And, mm-hmm.
and
she loves it.
I really like it. It's tough. I was just at the dinner I go home.
Oh. And what I'd like to say, I'm Chris Anderson, and you know, thanks for your attention. I think that safety versus maintenance was a losing frame last year in the funding stuff. I think we all know that. The problem is that it divides Portlanders instead of uniting us around stuff that we can all agree on, you know, which is sustainability and a healthy city. So I'm an entrepreneur, and the question, you know, what I'm wondering, what I'm asking myself is, the return on investment for greenways and other bike infrastructure is just so staggering. It's hard for me to see any other posture than all in is reasonable. So hopefully we're all in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. And Irma, we like your sign. We all love Portland, too. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Isabel McTighe. I'm a junior at Cleveland High School on Southeast 26th and Powell. First of all, thank you for all of your work in regards to supporting bicycling in Portland. I've been biking here since I was 4 years old. I've grown up biking everywhere. Our family never had a car. And neighborhood greenways were a big part of what helped me feel safe and confident as a bicyclist, especially as a young person where you can feel more threatened by cars. And I'm hoping that the adoption of this report will encourage more of my peers to also feel safe and confident on the roads, on their bikes, instead of just opting to drive right away when they get their license. So, yes, I'm in strong support of the adoption of this report, and thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, please.